I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
I do hope you're enjoying another wonderful On the Continent. Now, if you're listening to this on the 3rd of October and you can get yourself to Liverpool, tickets are still available for our show at the Epstein, ramblelive.com. Do come down, won't you?
By the way, just a little bit more of a culture for you both.
Yeah.
The latest episode, actually, in fact, I think the second latest episode of In Our Time, which is amazing, right. The Melvin Bragg fronted Radio 4 radio show, which is obviously a podcast, is all about Napoleon's retreat from Russia. It is brilliant. It's like an hour of amazing radio.
Is this where Bragg, I love listening to that podcast just because, like, you have these really kind of quite gentle academics who come on. He's going, I want to know about.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, Bragg.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I don't want to know about that. Just tell
that's
me about
it. That's how I see myself.
Right.
Councillor State Bragg. Yeah. That's fine. Great. But why is that happening? That's basically what he said.
Answer the question. Yeah.
Before we get into the main crux, the nuts and bolts, I just want to do a quick bit of housekeeping. Football Ramble Live is going to Liverpool tonight. That is Thursday, the 3rd of October. Still a few tickets available on the door. Tomorrow night, the 4th, will be in Northampton, and Sunday night, the 6th, will be in Brighton. There's lots of fun. There's loads going on. My man Andy Brassel over there has been to a show. He enjoyed it. Well, he told me he did anyway. So you can still get tickets at ramblelive.com. Please do so. We're going all around England and into the US and Canada in the first week of November. Ramblelive.com is the place to get tickets. Don't take my word for it. Take the reviews' word for it. Been very well reviewed so far. Mm-hmm. So we're grateful for that. Anyway, on Tuesday night, I was at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium for Spurs' capitulation and it was a capitulation against Bayern Munich. It was a surprising end score, and I wouldn't have predicted it at half time. I thought Bayern Munich probably would have won the game, but not quite to the extent that they did. A lot of people have emailed in using otc@footballrambledaily.com to do so. I've picked out Nathan Gisby on Twitter as well. People are interested as it pertains to this show and what it means for Niko Kovac, because I think he's been someone who consistently through the last few months has been someone we've talked about maybe not lasting in the job an awful long time. But yeah, that result's been a real feather in the cap for him, hasn't it?
Yeah, it was a great result for Hansi Flick. This is one of the strange things about Bayern is that, you know, you had all these doubts about Kovac last year. He won the league, but that was seen as maybe not even par for the course at Bayern these days. They don't really judge themselves on that. It is about how they perform Champions League and how, well, not only the results that they get, but the kind of performances that they put in. And yeah, he's had coaching staff imposed on him from on high, which, you know, in any other job, in any other kind of field is, you know, you would think coaches would take that as a slight.
You know, Brian Robson was very, very grateful to receive Terry Venables at Middlesbrough.
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah.
And was, which way round did it work with Roy Evans and Gerard Houllier? One of them was annoyed with the other one at one point, I'm sure.
Depended which game it was.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of an undermining thing to happen
to the dysfunction at Bayern that you've got, you know, too many cooks up top, potentially spoiling the broth, where, you know, you've got Rummenigge wants something, Hoeneß wants another, and yeah, I think this has been a bit of an issue post Guardiola with Bayern in terms of everyone hasn't been rowing in the same direction, and I think that sometimes can stop you becoming greater than the sum of your parts, which I think even a behemoth like Bayern needs to do if you are to compete with the so-called teams that have Lionel Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo. So I think it felt like a big statement win rather than performance, because it wasn't a consistent performance from minute zero to minute 95.
No.
And in some respects, you know, I can remember when Bayern have come to North London before and absolutely wiped the floor with
Arsenal.
And I love how you said that whilst looking down,
yeah,
without blinking. Arsenal.
I just heard the words Bayern and North London. Like an association.
I thought those wins were more impressive than this one, which isn't to take anything away from the 7-2. But I think that what was puzzling was A, the collapse from Spurs, and B, it was just one of those nights where you could see the Bayern players knew that they could get at Spurs, went for the kill, and also players gained in confidence and felt that, yeah, they were going to try things, and it came off, and it did come off.
I think what else we have to point out is there's a case for this being a bit of an anomaly, isn't there? Because
yes,
the difference between the 7 that Bayern actually got and the expected goals figure, which varies from different sources, but is significantly lower than the 7 they actually produced, backs up Mauricio Pochettino's feeling that everything they hit went in. Mm. And they did finish spectacularly well from those goals from Kimmich and Lewandowski in the first half to Gnabry in the second half. And I have to say, possibly my favourite bit of those after-match celebrations, whereas Gnabry, after the best performance of his career, goes to get the ball, and he's approaching Javi Martinez,
yeah,
who's got it, and Martinez just boots it into the away fans.
Yeah,
and look on Gnabry's face.
He looks so sad. He looks really upset.
It's really unfortunate. But I don't think we should use this result, as an excellent as it was, to whitewash Bayern's season or Niko Kovac's current status. The fact is, as James was saying, he's not unanimously backed, and he's never been, really. I think if you go back to the start of the season when they were chasing Leroy Sané, and Kovac just sort of popped his head above the parapet to make a quite anodyne comment about, well, I'm hopeful that we'll sign him, and it would be great to have him on our team. And he was immediately slapped down by Rummenigge and made to apologise for it in public, which tells you where he is. Now, I think having said that, there's a sense of where what Bayern are as a club, in that the power has always been further upstairs. And one of the things that Pep Guardiola loves so much about coaching there is the fact that he was just the coach, that he didn't have to do anything else, that he didn't represent anything bigger like he did at Barcelona. He wasn't a spokesman for what the club meant, and he wasn't a spokesman for where they were going in terms of their sporting direction off the pitch. So to have a coach who's just another employee is not a thing for Bayern at all. But having said that, I saw them at Paderborn the weekend before, and Paderborn are the weakest team in the division. They will finish bottom of the Bundesliga. They've got an annual budget of 11 million euro.
Would Spurs finish bottom of the Bundesliga?
On the second half performance, yes.
They had this great pass, Paderborn, all away from home, didn't they?
Yeah, and they were so careless. Like, Lewandowski missed an open goal from 2 feet out. Thiago Alcantara nearly scored an own goal from the halfway line because he wasn't looking when he passed back, and Neuer wasn't looking while he was passing it back.
Mm.
And I guess in retrospect, you can say they had half an eye on this Spurs game. But there were still difficulties with Bayern, I think, even after such a ruthless second half performance. What that has underlined is that their best 11 has pretty much the same template as before, but instead of having Robin and Ribery, you have Gnabry, who's playing very well and has been playing very well for a long time, and the work he's put in at Hoffenheim with Julian Nagelsmann is quite clear. And Kingsley Coman, who has been in terrific form both for Bayern and France this year. So does this make Kovac safer? No. It's credit to him, absolutely. But medium term, I don't think it puts him in any of a better place. And I think just to take this result and look at the fact that they're unbeaten so far in the Bundesliga and say everything's all right at Bayern is not correct. I mean, I think there's still an argument that when you look at the back half of their transfer window, they've signed Perisic and Coutinho, which are great signings in isolation. But were they the signings that they intended to make at the beginning of the window? No. Were they opportunity signings? Yes. Are either of them in Bayern's best 11? I think probably not. I think in most occasions, when you go with that Gnabry, Coman, Lewandowski front three, you don't play Coutinho as well. So it's something that they celebrated joyously because they've had some pretty miserable moments in the Champions League, and especially the way in which they went out of the competition to Liverpool. And it's something that James was underlining before, that the manner of which you go out in the Champions League. Anyone couldn't get knocked out of the Champions League, and that was Bayern under Guardiola, wasn't it? Because after getting flamed by Real Madrid in the first year, they were undone by 10 minutes of Messi in the Camp Nou and a load of injuries in the second year. In the third year, I mean, goodness knows how they didn't beat Atletico Madrid. So, you know, winning the Champions League or not can be luck. And that's something when we're analysing, we don't want to put ourselves out of business. That's something that we can kind of deny. But luck is a huge part of it. What's not acceptable to Bayern and their fans is the way that they went out to Liverpool so passively. And, you know, that really gave Liverpool their start in last year's Champions League after they couldn't get things going away from home in the group stages. So there's a long way to go, but yeah, it's a great result for them.
And it's also a result and a performance that he can tuck under his wing and take back to Munich with him. And people are going to take notice. They're going to go, actually, well, perhaps we didn't know that Bayern could perform and play this way in the Champions League away from home. Now, I know they were very fortunate.
I mean, does he get credit strictly for their finishing?
Well, I mean,
I don't know if he does.
I think that's a kind of an overly forensic question to ask. I mean, the point is they've won 7-2 away from home in the Champions League. It's last season's finalist. And the fact that they've got good players performing to their peak level is a good thing. And the manager should. I mean, if what you guys
but have they performed to their peak level over the entirety of the game? I guess going back to what James was saying,
wouldn't they possibly?
I mean,
not,
it's not a definitive performance. It's a definitive result. Is it a definitive performance?
But the point I was just going to go
and
on.
Of course, they've had Pep Guardiola as their coach, who is all about performance and has shown Bayern that it's all about performance, not just the result.
But there is a tendency to overanalyze, and you're right in what you say, Andy, that we have to make sure we guard against putting ourselves out of a job. But if what you both are saying about Bayern Munich is that the politics is so important, then I've obviously no reason to doubt you at all. But if Niko Kovac wants to stay in the job, he needs to essentially start working on things like optics and dealing himself in to credit for these kind of performances, because at the very top level, it's a lot to do with politics, how long you stay in a job. You have to own the victories and kind of absolve yourself from the poor performances. So he's got to do that. And if he does that, I can't see how this is going to not be a beneficial thing for him and his career.
Oh, no, I agree insofar as when he goes for his next job, which won't be as big as Bayern.
So you think it'll be a PowerPoint and it'll just be most of this second half of this game?
No, I mean, he will be able to say, I was Bayern coach when Bayern beat Spurs 7-2.
And then we're knocked out in the second round by Zenit or something.
Well, this is the thing. Like, I think we have to kind of take a step back from where we are at in the season right now. Because ultimately, a lot of the times we forget what happens in the group stages. We forget the great group stage performances on match day two. For example, when PSG ripped through Carlo Ancelotti's Paris Saint-Germain, and just as we were talking about that PSG result against Real Madrid a few weeks ago, these things will get quickly forgotten. When we reach a round of 16 game, quarter final game, and they either disappoint or go out, but he will be able to say to, I don't know, Augsburg or whoever he's going to get his next job at, look at me, I did win the league, I got Eintracht Frankfurt to the cup final and won the cup, and I also beat Spurs 7-2, who were runners help. Up the finals. So you are right, Luke.
It's got to have some kind of currency.
I can help you beat Spurs 7-2. Oh, you're never going to play them?
No, well, they might play them in the UEFA Conference League in years to come.
That's the way it's going, is it?
Maybe. Jaroncata Ngarulu Pilia Celi Tsuru Go! Speaking of sort of notable performances, I mean, Club Bruges / Brugge. Oh, I can't keep up.
Now, the finishing in this game was as good as the Bayern finishing, I would say. unorthodox finishes.
It's rare to see a finish that not even the striker knows it's happened. But it did happen in this game.
What I found extraordinary was obviously Thibaut Courtois was taken off at half-time feeling dizzy and sick. I would be feeling dizzy and sick after conceding those two goals, because I mean, from everything you're taught as a goalkeeper, you know, in terms of like, okay, how do I prepare for this situation, all of that went out the window for these goals, because like, you just can't possibly prepare for what he was about to do, you know, sort of stumble, fall over, be off balance, look completely out of control, and yet still find a way to beat you.
The second one was a bit Harry Kane at Leicester, wasn't it? Rolling with the stumble, and the finish in the end was actually really, really good.
Yeah,
I think the second one deserves a lot more credit than the first.
Yeah.
I mean, the disguise that he puts on these finishes every time.
The first, I cannot stress enough, he didn't even know he was doing it. The second one, he did know what he was doing. Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
And the celebration, he knew what he was doing with the celebration.
Oh, yeah.
The big Cristiano Ronaldo.
Remember the name, Bonaventure Dennis.
Yeah. What do we know about him? Talk us to a bit more about him, because he wouldn't have grabbed the attention of many a football fan, I wouldn't have thought.
Well, he's new to me as well. Right. I mean, just arrived at Club Brugge this season. So it was good to see him lead the line like that. I mean, what they've got is they've got an enormous amount of experience in midfield as well. And I thought both Hans Vaneken and Ruud Vormer, even though he ended up getting sent off in the end, were really, really good. Vaneken in the first half was pinging those passes to find space behind the fullbacks, especially Carabajal. And I don't know, when you were talking about the substitution Real Madrid made at half-time, James. I mean, bringing on Marcelo, I don't know if they thought that there's so much space behind Nacho and he's actually a proper defender. Maybe we need to not worry about it and sling an extra attacking player on the pitch, which is what Marcelo is. But I thought it was a really, really accomplished performance from Club Brugge. And, you know, I think especially after they didn't win the first game at against Galatasaray, both Club Brugge and Galatasaray are obviously going for that Europa League spot, will have been thinking, we let something slip there, because you know we had our opportunity to move towards third place, but to go and produce a performance like that afterwards, I think is really impressive. It's also a feeling of where Real Madrid are at the moment as well. I mean, I've heard people say they played well in the second half to come back. They played passably in the second half to come back. I'm not sure I'd go as far as good. And they did just about snatch the draw. And I think Club Brugge deserved
against
their point.
Against 10-man Bruges.
Yeah.
And the
whichever way you slice it.
Home. I mean, yeah.
The amazing thing was Brugge still went for the win after they got pegged back to 2-2. And they had 10 men, which really said a lot.
I watched this game. I found the lack of intensity in large parts of the game on Real Madrid's behalf almost quite baffling. Like, it was almost, it felt a bit like they could just breeze past Club Brugge.
But don't you think
when
they
went a goal, you were quiet. And when they went a goal behind and then two goals behind, it didn't really burnish the whole team with this kind of desire to get back into the game, with the exception of Ramos, who's just like a whirling dervish anyway. But
don't you think that thing is what we were saying about Vanaken and Vormer? They're not spring chickens, are they? Especially Vormer. You know, he made his Netherlands international debut at 30. And in fairness, that is an that is an extraordinary, last year, it's an extraordinary achievement when you think someone leaves Dutch football, goes to play in Belgium, which I think most Eredivisie fans would consider an inferior league, and then you play well enough to the extent there, you play influentially enough at home and internationally to get called up into the Dutch. That's pretty impressive. I know the Netherlands have had their dip, but
I thought there was still a number of things that were a bit surprising about the Madrid game. Just like, you looked at the bench and there's like no Bale, no James. I was just like, okay, so in terms of the change up, where's it going to come from? Ultimately, he'd gone with the team that has kind of steadied the ship at Madrid over the last few weeks since that defeat to Paris Saint-Germain, where you can understand him playing Nacho and Lucas Vazquez because they put a shift in. And they've had clean sheets since then. And yet, I kind of agree with Luke, the body language of the Madrid players, and we've seen it frequently now with Madrid in the Champions League, where they kind of just take things for granted.
I feel like they don't have, a large part of that squad doesn't have the desire to continually try and repeat what they've achieved in this competition in the past.
Which is understandable to an extent.
I think that when you chuck things into the mix like Hazard, who's obviously not won the Champions League before, and he kind of sort of flat to deceive in this game against players, to be frank, with the greatest respect to Club Brugge, he should be having on a plate. He should be having them on toast. He should be wanting the ball every minute and he should be driving at them and making it hard for them, but he wasn't doing that.
But I think a big part of that is the rest of the team. I mean, bear in mind that Eden Hazard's still settling. He's still getting his fitness.
I understand that.
And
a
huge part of that for him.
Can I just say that mentally he's been in Madrid for about 5 seasons. So he should be used to it by now. And can I also spare a moment for fucking unused substitute Isco? What is happening with it? If Isco wasn't in any other club, he would be playing. I don't understand how he continually puts up with the disrespect he gets over and over again. To be an unused substitute in a game that after 55 minutes you're 2-0 down at home against an inferior opposition in the Champions League and he's not being used. It's ridiculous.
But you'd be pissed off if you were Luka Jovic as well. But the reality is they can only make 3 subs and they were kind of forced at half time to change the goalkeeper, of course. And Areola looked decent again. He saved them a couple of times, didn't he, when he came on? Very, very handy off his line.
Am I missing
something?
If he
can even challenge Courtois.
He's always been a decent keeper and I've seen him. Am I missing something here? You guys watch him more closer than me. Is he a bit of a Rickmaster or something?
No, I mean, it's an odd one, isn't it? I think Zidane has always been kind of quite loyal to Keylor Navas and Navas has gone the other way because Thibaut is the big signing. And yeah, Thibaut hasn't really been all that impressive since he's moved away from Chelsea.
No.
But I again looked at that Madrid team and I thought, hang on a minute, your only summer signing in here is Eden Hazard. And it's more or less the same team, same ageing team that we saw last, win the Champions League final when Zidane left the first time around.
Yes, agreed.
And
but they also did a great thing where they gamble with the fact that if Brugge's wing backs could work really hard, which they did, and their back three could essentially look after Hazard and Lucas Vazquez, then they could overload the midfield because they have an extra man in midfield, and then Kroos, Casemiro, and Modric, who are essentially now a Real Madrid midfield tribute act, that you see on like a Sunday night in the pub, because you can get tickets to go and see the real at Wembley Stadium. You can get something out of it, and it does show you actually that if you snap into every tackle, and if you work really hard, and you really want the ball, and you really want to win it back, and you take your chances in however comedy fashion, you can get a result. And the one thing is, next time out, I think Real Madrid go to Galatasaray. And you mentioned earlier the idea that the Club Brugge or Galatasaray are going for this third Europa League spot. If Galatasaray beat Real Madrid at home next time out, Real Madrid will have 1 point from three games.
Yeah, I mean, unless they do
a Spurs from last season, they're in big trouble.
They've just got to believe a little bit more than they did against Paris Saint-Germain this week. It's unusual to see a Fatih Terim side that defensive, really. They were clearly there just to hold Real Madrid, to hold Paris Saint-Germain.
They've
got a goal
in the Champions League this season yet.
Yeah, which is a big deal. And Falcao's struggled to get chances so far. But yeah, I don't want to keep going back to the Real Madrid midfield, but what you were saying about relying on the old guard, James, and what you were saying, Luke, about the tribute act, the lack of legs in there is alarming. And I think the big difference between that and when they played at Atletico in the derby previous weekend is Fede Valverde was brilliant in that game. And I realised that there needs to be rotation. I'm not sure if the one that you need to rotate has to be one of the youngest ones and one who made a massive difference in a huge game and let Madrid control that for large swathes of it.
But you know why that is, because he doesn't appear to trust any other midfield player. He's kind of relaxing into this old sweater, isn't he? Every time he feels a little bit cold, he's putting his old sweater on. That sweater is those three midfield players.
But also, I mean, it just feels like they've moved the museum onto the pitch at Real Madrid these days.
Yeah.
That was the Champions League winning team from a few years back.
Yeah.
And
nice to see him.
Yeah, they were good. They were good ones, weren't they?
But that's going to play the hit, Zizou.
Play the hit.
But that's going to finish him ultimately, isn't it? Because basically, his job is to regenerate this team, is to make it fresher. And that's what he failed to do in the second part of his first tenure.
He's not, and I don't think, yeah, look, this might come back to bite me. He's not up to doing that. He won't, he can't do that.
Niko Kovac for the Madrid job?
Job swap.
Job swap.
Banco pentru Mateiu, chutul lui Mateiu, se transformă în pasă și gol!
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
some interesting stuff coming out of Italy ahead of the big game on Sunday night, James. I thought we could preview that as Inter, who are still top, of course, play Juventus. But before we get into that, can I have a little quick word on your, not goal bay, but maybe original bay, Mario Balotelli, who scored his first Serie A goal for 4 years against Napoli last week. It feels like a long time ago now, but perhaps just a quick word for him before we move on to the big potatoes.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a couple of games since he came back from suspension, both big games against Juventus Napoli, and Brescia have lost narrowly in both of them. As you mentioned, he scored at the San Paolo. And it's kind of funny that Balotelli, he's played, 180 minutes, and he's already had more shots than anyone else on that team in the previous four games.
The game before the Napoli game, was it against Juventus?
Yeah.
I mean, he was shooting from everywhere.
So he's doing exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know, he is low percentage shot merchant who loves to take a free kick from 45 yards and try and beat the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
But he's been doing a bit of everything, really, and yeah, I wondered how much it would maybe disrupt Brescia because they've got a really kind of defined identity on the pitch. They play 4-4-2 diamond with a number 10, Spalek or Romulo, and then they've got two up front, which is Donnarumma, who has been very prolific in the lower leagues for many, many years. And yeah, in many respects, it's been more lucrative for him to stay in the lower leagues because he's the guy that Serie B sides who are chasing promotion know can get you 30 goals.
Yeah.
And there's more market and more money for him to stay in the second division than go into Serie A and potentially be a guy who only scores 8 or 10 goals.
Yeah.
But he's been scoring regularly since they've come up. I just wondered if Balotelli would, you know, demand the ball more, demand more attention, and that would take away from Donnarumma. But Balotelli's been coming short, pulling left. He's been trying to create, and this has always been the thing about Balotelli, where you say, "Well, if you stay in the penalty area, you will, you know, you'll score more goals than you do." And he's got, he tends to average a goal every other game.
What kind of forward is Donnarumma, by the way? Just to give people a picture of how they're dovetailing together.
So Donnarumma is a kind of collaborative centre forward. He likes to play with another strike partner. It's very kind of Shearer and Sutton-esque.
Nice.
If you look at the last few years, he's made other strikers look very good whilst also scoring a lot himself. So like Caputo, who came up with Empoli and has since moved on to Sassuolo. Lapadula, back in the day, who did very good with him at Teramo and then moved on to Pescara and then got a move to Milan on the back of that. He's got a range of finishes. You know, he can score in the air. He can score from outside of the area as well. This is the thing about Brescia is you probably look at them in comparison with some of the other teams that have come up and you think they've got enough goals certainly to stay up. And not only that, they've got a very good midfield with Tonali and Bisoli and De Sena. So you've got a good mix there of De Sena, who's very experienced, Tonali, who is seen as one of the next big things, who's got a kind of... He's a complete midfielder, I think, Tonali.
This is the guy we were talking about a year or two ago.
Yeah,
the Pirlo comparison, that kind of stuff, which you don't like very much.
No, I don't think it's accurate. He does play in front of the defence. He does play for Brescia. He looks like Pirlo. But he is someone who likes to snap into tackles, someone who likes to bring the ball forward and not dribble, but carry the ball up the pitch in transition more than I think you would expect from someone like Pirlo. Has been playing some really nice forward passes, but still, I don't think his passing is as accurate as Pirlo's was. But Pirlo was, you know, one of the very best to ever play the game.
Yeah.
And then they've got Bisoli, whose dad was a coach and is feisty. So they've got a lot about them, Brescia. And
is Eugenio Carini going to have to? I mean, this is all very nice and novel, and people are enjoying Balotelli being back at his old club and getting his first goal. I mean, they are probably going to be battling for some of the season against relegation, you perhaps think.
Yeah.
Is Carini at some point going to have to sort of rein him in a bit and say, look, you need to play for the team here because this isn't the Balotelli show. This isn't the Balotelli
show. That was going to be my question, actually. If they play 4-4-2 with a diamond, how does that work with a striker who doesn't do anything off the ball?
Well, again, this is the issue. When they lost the ball, he would occasionally track back and try and win it back, but never.
Is that early week's tokenism, though?
Well, occasionally. No, that's the compromise he can do with the coach. I'll do it occasionally.
What I was going to say, Andy, is never breaking into a sprint. And again, the issue, I suppose, is when you're paying Balotelli that kind of money, when the attention is falling on Balotelli, I think he has to play from start to finish because he needs to get match rhythm, needs to develop his match fitness. But we're seeing, you know, Balotelli stay on the pitch and Donnarumma be taken off, which, yeah, I don't think is necessarily kind of favouritism. I think it's pragmatism on Carini's part. Carini, who I think has already done a pretty good job so far this season. They've lost close games to Milan, Napoli and Juventus. So they've already played three big teams in the first six games of the season, and they've run them pretty close. So, and he's already been, you know, you've got Massimo Cellino, the president there, who I can't remember whether it was after the Milan game, was already like, I think I might need to make a coaching change. I've got that itch again, you know, I just need to do it. And then in the end, stood by Carini. But I think Balotelli in his head, and I think you can make a case that he's playing for the team to some extent. He's trying to play make for the team by come short. And he does have a great range of passing. You know, he is... Yeah, Balotelli generated a lot of hype for a number of reasons. Not only his goal scoring, but because he can do a bit of everything if he wants to. He has got that ability to pick a pass that not many other centre forwards can do.
The thing that amazes me, James, is, and you had it at Marseille as well, the fact that Balotelli can have no proper pre-season to speak of. And at Marseille, when he arrived there, he'd been sitting on his hands for a number of weeks, not played much for Nice, didn't have a proper pre-season with them. And he can come into the team and just do it off memory.
He's got natural talent.
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone's doubting that. Yeah, I was just looking at pictures of Brescia on Google Images, actually. It's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
Look at that church.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah.
It's got a World Heritage site.
Not far away from Milan. If you fly to Milan, you can get there by train in half an hour.
You recommend it for a visit, would you?
Yeah, why not? I mean, I recommend, you know, basing yourself in one city, and you can, if you go to Milan, you can go to Bergamo to watch Atalanta. You can go to Brescia to watch Brescia. You can go to Verona as well, and they're all not far away at all. So, you know, it's a good like kind of hub if you want.
Apparently, it's got the best preserved Roman public buildings in the whole north of Italy. So
does it have Miguel Veloso free kicks though? Get yourself off to Verona.
Verona, can you go to Verona from there, James?
Yeah.
Right. A lot of the emails we get are about, well, where shall I go in Italy to watch a game, or where shall I go in France?
The answer's everywhere.
James. Ask James that.
No, I think if you want to see a lot of games, so I'm going to Milan tomorrow. And you can go watch Brescia Sassuolo Friday night because, you know, as I say, you can just catch the train. It's, you know, half an hour.
Can people come to your house and get a cab to the airport with you? And is that what you're offering?
You can spot my Uber with me. Yeah. and then you can catch the train to Genoa to watch Genoa Milan on Saturday, which, you know, again, is not far. And then you can be back in Milan on Sunday to watch the Derby d'Italia.
Yeah.
So Milan is a very good place at the moment to sort of base yourself. Or I'd also recommend just basing yourself in Bologna because that's in Emilia Romagna. And at the moment, you've got Parma, Bologna, Spal, Sassuolo.
And the food,
yeah.
Sad
news actually yesterday. I think maybe this hasn't resonated because Champions League and everything that's going on around that. But Sassuolo's owner, Giorgio Squinzi, passed away at 76.
That's really sad.
Squinzi, who in the 80s and 90s was behind the Mappe cycling team, achieved a lot of success with that, and is really responsible for Sassuolo becoming a thing, you know, because Sassuolo were never a thing before Squinzi put money into the club and implemented best practice there. They've just, you know, opened the new training ground. Obviously, they're one of only like three teams in the league who actually owns or, you know, manages their own stadium.
Yeah.
And you just wonder what impact that might have on Sassuolo going forward.
Well, first and foremost, it's sad because, you know, very it's sad. For his family and his friends, but I mean, we hope it doesn't derail their season and all the rest of it. All right. Well, what about you? Presumably, you're going to Milan to go see Inter v Juventus, the big top of the table clash, if you can have a top of the table clash at this stage of the season. But I think in this case, you probably can because
they are first and second.
They are. But I just mean a worthy.
No, I get what you mean.
I mean, and Conte's Inter have started very well. He can't start any better than winning your first six games, and they give a pretty good shine of themselves against Barcelona in the Champions League. What do you?
What would you read into this game? Do you think it's a really important pivotal moment, or do you think, as you mentioned earlier with the Champions League group stage games, it'll probably fade into insignificance later in the season because it's about consistency?
I think this is a big game for just so many reasons. You have Conte, for example, trying to dismantle, take a sledgehammer to the house that he built, which is Juventus. And I think, yeah, they're 2 points ahead of them at the moment. Were he to open up a 5-point gap, I always look at Conte and think you trust him to be able to hold a lead, you know, when it comes to, you know, being a league contender. And and also it's a big game for Sarri as well, because you don't want to be the guy who not only relinquishes Juventus's dominance in Serie A, but you don't want it to come at the expense of, you don't want it to come at the hands of Antonio Conte, you know, Conte who started this thing off at Juventus, and looks like he can be the one who takes it away from them. So I think purely from a kind of residence point of view, I think this game has real potential to have serious repercussions, I would say, for at least how we perceive them both, because I think it would seem further validation for Juventus that, you know, by repudiating this kind of winning is all that matters kind of mantra that they have, how you win now matters. And if we see Sarri and his Juventus side produce and play very well and get the win at San Siro, that will be seen as a very big validation for the kind of courageous decision that the board made, even though it's still early days. And likewise with Conte, all the enthusiasm that's mounted, which remains unchecked despite the defeat, the first loss of the season in Barcelona. For an hour, they played very well there, and it feels like Inter are really kind of going places. So I think it is early, Luke, but I think we can actually, there's a lot to take from this game potentially.
Let's hope the flight gets you there, James.
James, were you surprised to see them give that much in Barcelona? Because when I spoke to people, when I went to Inter Lazio last week, speaking to journalists and a few fans, their feeling was that the Champions League was very much a second priority. Now, I understand that winning Serie A would be the top thing.
I think Antonio Conte's career has suggested that as well.
Yeah, that's true. But I was a little surprised with the intensity that they put into that game in Barcelona. Whereas, as you say, if they'd have walked away with a draw, it wouldn't have been unfair. But they gave absolutely everything in this game. Which, when you're playing a match that, in so many ways, I don't know if it defines the season. It certainly defines the early season, despite those six successive wins on the Sunday. It would have been very easy for them to take their foot off the pedal a little.
Yeah, I just think that these days, if you work and play for a elite club, you can't pick or choose which games you turn up for and which ones you don't. And the Champions League does have a resonance, does have a real importance. I think that is one of the reasons why Juventus, for example, decided to make the change from Allegri to Maurizio Sarri, because they appreciate that they have to play a certain style of football in order to break through and win the Champions League. And likewise, I think, you know, Luke just mentioned it there with Conte, that perception of him, that image of him in the Champions League, which, you know, has its merits, but also is a little bit unfair because, you know, Juventus, first season that he's there, they're not in the Champions League. Chelsea, first season that he's there, they're not in the Champions League. And, you know, while they went out in the group stages in his, second year at Juventus, they didn't then reach the semi-finals of the Europa League, which is a lesser competition, but the kind of core group of players that were at Juventus at the time kind of put reaching the Champions League final the following year down to the experience that they gathered over that semi-final run.
I mean, to an extent, does that fetter him in a way? Because as you say, no Champions League in the first year at Chelsea, no Champions League in the first year at Juventus. It did give him a clear run to... It's not just about the extra games you don't play. It's just time on the training pitch to actually work with your players. Yep. And in the first year, when you want to get your ideas across, that's a really big deal. And the fact that not only has he got Champions League, not only is Champions League a massive deal for Inter and their new project that they've been building in recent years, but they've been lumped with such a difficult group as well. I think actually at the start as well, I mean, that performance, especially last night, I mean, they weren't great against Slavia, obviously, has really given them hope. I mean, I think before the start of this group, I would have said, given Conte in the Champions League and given the context, to me, Barcelona and Dortmund would be the clear qualifiers, even though people use this group of death epithet for it. But having seen those two games and having seen the performances and reading into the performances rather than the results, I think especially with these two games coming up against Dortmund, I think Inter have got every chance of getting out of this group.
I do as well. And as soon as the draw was made, I bet on them to win the Champions League. Because you can trade it. Because you can trade it off later.
Yeah, sure.
You get a much bigger price because of the group they're drawn in. Mm. And if I was going to be fair on Antonio Conte based on the comment I made a second ago, I've got no reason to be fair to him, but I will. He's probably, you'd hope, he's got Champions League success or European success in his future, because he's still, although we think of him as part of the furniture, he's only 50. And he's only really had, as you guys have alluded to, probably five, maybe even four opportunities to do something good in the Champions League. You said the first year at Juventus, he wasn't
in the Champions League.
And what did he have, 2 years after that? And the first year at Chelsea, he only had 1 year after that. So he's only had three or four opportunities. And before that, he's managed a kind of lower level, really, relatively speaking.
And you think, if you think of...
And he's obviously international manager as well. So
if you think when you take a job with a big club like Juventus or Chelsea, but he's taking over them when they've fallen short of reaching the Champions League.
And that's why
it suggests there's a big job to be done.
Yeah.
So I think in that respect, you know, we should judge Conte carefully and his record in Europe. I think, again, I thought last night against Barca, for an hour, Inter were brilliant. And they should have scored more than one goal.
Well, Ter Stegen again saved Barcelona, as he has so many times.
That save from that header was unreal.
Yeah.
Absolutely unreal. I couldn't believe it. I had to watch it again. It was so good. It was such a good save. A strong hand, point blank almost.
Yeah. Incredible. And also, like, if you're Lautaro Martinez, as soon as you head that ball, you connect with it so sweetly, you must think it's in.
Oh, yeah, you must do, yeah.
He's in power... accuracy, and it's another fantastic save from Tosti.
Vă spuneam cu evoluții remarcabile în ultimele etape, trebuie să se recunoască învins la această execuție perfectă, 2-1 Craiova viitorul.
Weird story that's now kind of come to a conclusion in France, Andy. I know that it's been rumbling on for a while. Ligue 1 club Nice have sacked Lamine Diaby Fadiga after he admitted stealing a watch worth a lot of money from Casper Dolberg, relatively
70,000 euros.
Yeah. I know this is something that has been suspected for a while, and it happened around the middle of last month, didn't it? But now we can sort of fully report on it. I wonder what you make of it, because I don't know if I've ever really come across a story like this before. Diaby Fadiga is a highly rated young player as well, so it's not an easy decision for them to part company with him. There'll be a lot of regrets, of course, on both sides. I mean, what do you make of the story?
Well, they had to fire him. There was no other way around.
But it's a strange one, isn't it?
It is a little. And Diaby Fadiga's explanation for it in his apology is a really split opinion in France. Because
so, what did he say?
He's come out and said, "Well, look, I was motivated by jealousy, and you know, I felt that." You know, my opportunities were being stopped, and you know, in one way, I suppose, like the fact that he's expressing vulnerability, I think is something to be encouraged, because that's not something we really get that much in football. And you know, he's not blamed the club, he's not blamed Dolberg, and he has apologized to them both. But on the other hand, he's slightly undermined by the fact that as soon as he nicked it, he sold it.
Right.
So I think there are two schools of thought on how this should be received.
So how was he caught then?
This is something, I think this is the arguably the major part of the story.
Mm.
Because when Dolberg complained to the club and said, look, my watch has been nicked, this has been what's happened, the club didn't really deal with it. And right. Jean-Pierre Rivère, the recently returned president, said, well, look, there's nothing we can do about it.
Hmm.
And if that was my record signing,
yeah,
I would be wanting to
call time
exhaust every avenue to not just to find out who'd done it, because you can't have people doing that at your club.
At any workplace.
No.
Yeah.
But to just make the your record signing feel as if he's important, as if he matters, and as if you want to look after him. And the reason that it was actually pursued in the end is because Dolberg himself went to the police and opened a complaint. That's when the investigation accelerated. And, you know, I don't think we can say Diaby Fadiga is the criminal mastermind of the century because he got caught pretty quickly afterwards.
Mm.
If I was Dolberg, I'd have a little bit of a feeling hanging over from this about why didn't the club deal with it better?
Yeah.
I would be really concerned about that. And for a club like Nice that has got a lot in their favour, they've got a great stadium, they've got...
New investment, of course.
Yeah, they've got new investment, which is enabling them to step up a level, but that's building on a great stadium, a great new training ground that's not been
opened.
Lovely
part of the world, isn't it? You're flying to Nice, yeah. And it is bloody lovely.
It is, and also you've got Patrick Vieira, a very well-respected figure across
Patrick
the game.
So Patrick Vieira isn't a part of... He hasn't... Patrick Vieira has shown... I'm asking the question, I'm not making a statement.
Yeah.
Has he shown any kind of leadership at all in this as the coach?
Well, it's not for him to do. It's for the club to... No, it's a club issue. It's not for him to deal with. And all he can do is get the team out there. But when you've got that happening before Dolberg's debut, and, you know, there was talk of whether he would actually make his full debut in the end, and he did. He came. He started the game against Dijon shortly after this, and this was before it had been resolved.
Right.
Scored a goal in that as they went on to win. He scored a couple of goals. He scored again last weekend against Lille, and he looks the part already. Now, for a team that Vieira drilled very well but couldn't score a goal for love nor money last season, he's been a big addition, and that Ratcliffe money will help them. Well, it's already helped them bring in
single-use plastics.
He needs the goal bonus to buy a new watch.
It's already helped them bring in Dolberg. It's helped them bring in Adam Unas on loan from Napoli, and Alexis Claude-Maurice, who Arsenal were looking at in midfield, who I think will score a lot of goals for them.
It's
from
a great name.
Midfield.
It is, isn't it?
I love that.
It's excellent. And it's just the start, really. It's just because they didn't have a lot of transfer window to work with once the sale to Ineos was verified. So for a club that wants to step up a level, I don't think it's a great look. And bear in mind that Vieira himself was questioning his future with the club when the takeover was going to happen, because it became clear that Jean-Pierre Rivière and Fournier, the sporting director, were going to come back. Now, he felt a bit sold down the river by Rivière and Fournier, because they had left, having signed him quite quickly afterwards. And he had something rewritten in his contract to say if Rivière and Fournier came back, he could quit.
Right.
So he's not done that.
Right.
But Ineos have clearly had to talk Vieira around and clearly had to say, you're important to us. We see you as the guy to lead this new project. And Vieira's decided, weighed it up and decided, okay, well, I'm going to stay. But yeah, there are some issues, I think.
Yeah, to say the least. We mentioned the big game earlier in terms of Inter vs Juve, and a big game in France this weekend is Saint-Étienne against Lyon. On paper, it looks like 19th versus 11th. Saint-Étienne will be looking to use it to kickstart their season, of course. I know they won last time out, but they've had a poor start, and Lyon have been terrible for themselves. But
there's like a point between them, despite that.
Yeah. But
difference in the table.
It is a fiercely contested game, this.
It always is. And
but I think our listenership might not fully be aware of how fiercely contested this game is.
Yeah,
and the history behind it.
It's fiercely contested for a number of reasons. You know, if we go back 40 years, Saint-Étienne were aiming to be champions of Europe. They were the biggest club in France. They were loved by all of France. And they do have this nostalgic theme. We were starting with nostalgia with Real Madrid, and we're ending with nostalgia with Saint-Étienne.
They're not still playing in midfield from the 70s, are they?
You know what?
No, Jacques Santini is no longer there.
It might improve the current form. Yeah. I mean, he couldn't get in the original 76 finalists, yeah. But you know, maybe he'd improve the current team. Mm. You know, there is talent on the books at Saint-Étienne, but Jean-Louis Gasset, the coach who'd done so much to improve them, he left. And hinted at retirement at the end of last season. He thought he'd done as much as he could with St Etienne. He wanted to move to be closer to his family in Montpellier. So they tried to preserve the magic, really, by bringing up Ghislain Printemps, his assistant. And Printemps has coached Bastia in the top flight before, so he's not a top flight novice. He's an experienced coach. It was very much like when Villas-Boas surprisingly left Porto and they promoted Vitor Pereira, and it was never really the same. And it's,
you were adamant he wasn't going to leave Porto as well. You were adamant.
Yeah.
He changed his mind late doors, didn't he, AVB there? I think made quite a lot of egg on your face, Andy. Rarely. It's rare it happens. Quite a lot of egg on your face.
Yeah,
at that point.
Imagine a situation changing in football.
I know.
So unusual.
Yeah, I know.
And it worked out well for everyone, didn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
But I think that the Pranton thing is not that dissimilar to Vitor Pereira.
Right.
Except it's a lot more tough to keep St Etienne in a challenging position than it was to keep that brilliant Porto team on top of the league. And they've started this season very poorly.
They almost set themselves on fire last time, mate. Even though they won, they scored and they got a man sent off pretty much straight afterwards.
Yeah, that's right. And winning at Nîmes is easier than it was last season, but yeah, it was difficult all the same. And you could just see the way they played in that game against Nîmes, where they are confidence-wise. And, you know, some of their most experienced players like Loic Perrin at centre-half didn't look sure of himself at all, but they did manage to get the win, which was a huge thing for them. Is it going to save Printemps short or medium term? No, probably not, actually. So he's taking charge of the Europa League game against Wolfsburg this week, and he'll be taking charge of the derby on Sunday. But Claude Puel is waiting in the wings, of course, former Lyon coach himself. They expect to get more out of that team, because the way that Gasset changed things was, whereas under Christophe Galtier, they wanted, you know, a few little shining stars, but more players who could do everything all around the squad. Whereas Gasset decided to change the priorities on the budget, so they have less depth, but they paid more to starters, so they were able to get in the likes of Yann Mvila, Mathieu Debuchy, guys who he knew from the France team when he was assistant to Laurent Blanc, and later they've got on in Johan Cabaye as well.
Yeah, quite, nothing like recruiting the France Euro 2012 side in 2019.
Shows you look at Saint-Étienne's kind of back six. And it's quite interesting. I mean, Loic Perrin, you mentioned there, he's been at St Etienne his whole career.
Yes.
Very close to being capped fully internationally for France a few years ago.
Strongly linked to Arsenal, though, aren't they all?
Yeah, exactly. Mathieu Debuchy, we know all about him. Yann Mvila, Johan Cabaye. They've got the goalkeeper. I watched the highlights of the Nîmes St Etienne game, and the goalkeeper looked great. Is it Moulin in goal?
Yeah.
He made a lot of good saves. There's a lot to like about them.
He's second choice because Stéphane Ruffier...
Moulin Vert, because they're playing green.
He's carrying a finger injury.
Right, okay. So he's not their first choice goalkeeper?
No. Okay. I mean, they had to play a 17-year-old the week before because Moulin was injured himself. But the Ruffier thing exposes the problem they've got at board level at the moment and behind the scenes. Because Ruffier injured his finger, and I mean, he's one of the best goalkeepers in the division. He's fantastic. And he played through it. And then he said, look, it's really not right. I'm going to have to step out and get it sorted out. And Printemps and some of the coaching
staff. Leadership upstairs in any French club. He's just like, I've broken my finger. I think I'm going to have surgery.
Yeah.
I've lost my watch. Can anyone help me?
At some point, I am going to need to see a doctor.
And
yeah.
that, you know, they weren't happy about it. And basically, his goalkeeping coach, to whom he's very close to, has been marginalised. So there's a feeling that, you know, that there's been a bit of a rupture of trust between Ruffier and the club, which is big for them because he is one of their key players. There's no doubt about that. And then they've got this huge game against Lyon this weekend, which matters as much to Lyon as it does to them. Now, they're on this 7-match winless run, and then they went to Leipzig and won in the Champions League this week. A pretty shaky performance again in the first half. Second half, they look more on it. And what was clear is that the desire and the application was really there. Now, there's a lot of pressure on Silvinho. Now, Juninho, of course, the sporting director and best player in the club's history, who hand-selected Silvinho to be his coach, so very much the pressure is on him as well.
Good to see Martin Terrier on the score sheet, James.
Yeah, yeah.
dog of a player.
A dog of war.
Every week I have to say it.
Sorry, mate.
Well, I'd be a great Huddersfield sign.
I don't even regret interrupting you to
him,
say it.
Him and you never regret interrupting me. Him and Memphis are obviously two peas in a pod. But they work very well up front together. And, you know, Silvinho has been searching kind of manically for a tactical formula that's going to work. It looked like Juninho had set in stone the 4-3-3 because the feeling is the power is with him at the start of the season, but they've been through all sorts of different combinations. It was 3-5-2 in Leipzig, which worked pretty well.
He's out-coached Nagelsmann.
Has he? Is that what he's done?
Yeah, but apparently in the Champions League, that's not too difficult. I mean, Nagelsmann was getting very upset on the touchline. One of his assistants was sent off at some point when Silvinho went to shake his hand at the end.
Really? He didn't like it?
Nagelsmann wasn't that friendly towards him, so he really had the hump about it. There was a sense that I think there was a bit of an experience deficit. I mean, Timo Werner snatched a few big chances in the first half. Marcelo did a great clearance off the line from Yusuf Poulsen as well. But they looked a lot more settled in the second half. That two up
His
front
name is
really
Yusuf
worked for
Poulsen.
Them.
pick a winner for this Lyon game because we've got to get out of here.
I think St Etienne might edge it, actually. They really need it. And, of course, they'll have the fans behind them. There won't be any away fans there by dint of the préfecture not having it safety concerns. Right. But I think St Etienne might just edge it. And, of course, St Etienne fans, when we talk back about the nature of the derby, they feel that's their rightful place because they were the big dogs in the late 70s and early 80s while Lyon were yo-yoing between the two divisions. And, of course, they're... Their famous chairman Roche, he always said, didn't he, that
Lyon are in the suburbs.
In football, Saint Etienne will always be the city, and Lyon always the suburbs. Of course, the inverse is correct in real life because Lyon's considered very bourgeois.
Well, here's hoping only Lyon can't break your heart if you're Saint Etienne.
That was a stretch.
It was. I've been thinking about it for minutes. On like long kind of diatribes about, you know, certain stuff. Like, there's a great bit in that one about Napoleon's retreat from Russia when they're talking about, you know, the horses and the detail about what the horses are being fed and the fact they haven't been shod properly and how that means that when Napoleon goes back to France and tries to raise another army, it's kind of irrelevant because they haven't got enough horses because 300,000 horses were killed. Mm. It's interesting stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of similar to how Spurs got on against Bayern Munich.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.